True Screen for me was just an amazing company to get into, because I just think this technology needs to be out there in so many countries. It's just horrific the amount of women that actually have no access to screening in the world when it's preventable.
Hi everyone, I'm Sarah Minhinnick and welcome back to our next episode of Opening Bell. Technology has the ability to help us achieve amazing things in every area of our life, but the most important thing I think that it helps is our health. There's an old expression that says, if you're healthy, you're wealthy. And that's what I'm really looking forward to discussing in our next Opening Bell episode, as we talk to one of our listed companies who is using tech innovation to be at the forefront of health solutions.
And welcome back, everyone. My name is Doug Vrain with NZX. I just wanted to jump in and say, before we start, I'll just give the usual reminder that anything we discuss or information that we provide on this podcast does not constitute investment advice. And there's more of a disclaimer on that at the end that you can check out. But you can take a look if you want from there.
Great. So let's get into it. In New Zealand, we have incredible talent within the tech industry, and that's one of the things that we're really highlighting this Tech Week. This is also very evident in our next speaker, which is TrueScreen's CEO, Juliet Hull. Welcome, Juliet.
Thank you.
Thanks for joining us today. Cervical cancer is a really terrible disease that many people may not realize affects more than 600,000 women worldwide per year. I know I've been affected by it. I had a friend pass away from that, you know, 10 years this year. So it's a huge number. It's really omnipresent in our communities. And Juliet, we'd love to have you tell us a bit about TrueScreen, including what you're doing and where you operate globally.
Sure. Thanks, Sarah. And I think one of the things to point out is cervical cancer is one of the only preventable cancers, and it's prevented by screening. So it makes it even super more important that females can have easy access to screening, which is kind of how TrueScreen has come about. So TrueScreen is a device that is AI enabled. It's an optical and electrical handheld mobile device goes in and touches the cervix, just gently touches the cervix, doesn't have to have a scraping like smear, which is pretty uncomfortable for a lot of women. And it gives you a real-time result right there and then of abnormal or normal. And that's probably the key. We target lower to middle-income countries, and the reason why we target that is over 85% of cervical cancer in the world is based in those countries, and most of them don't have a robust screening program like we see in the developed markets. So it's an amazing technology. And it means that you get that instant result, which, as we know, one of the hardest things is getting women to get screened, let alone getting them back once they've got the result, or if the results got lost, or if it wasn't taken properly.
So one of the things that's great about what we do is we see all these awesome companies doing great things, and it's really inspiring to see what you are doing. And it must be super rewarding knowing that you're making a difference and getting a huge difference in people's lives. What was the kind of original inspiration behind your screening solution at TrueScreen that kind of got everything up and running?
Yeah, so I mean, I think that obviously the original inspiration was, how do you actually address that market of the, you know, lower to middle income countries, where they just don't have the same health opportunities that we have here in Australia and New Zealand. And I think so that's the driving force of how could they come up with something that was a real time, easy to use, didn't have to be in a hospital, so that you could actually reach those regional people or reach a greater population.
And what was out there before? Were there a lot of competitors or companies trying to enter the space? What did it look like Prior to now.
Yeah, so there's a couple of things that are happening predominantly in that lower to middle income country. You know, I think we probably don't get blasé about it, but, you know, we've got this great health system where we've got a free, robust screening program in New Zealand, which is available to everybody. That's actually not common around the world. And a lot of these countries don't even have a screening program up to individual areas. And there's a range of different things available. There is your pap smears, there is liquid-based cytology, there is VIA, which is just you spray vinegar on it, and if it goes white, then maybe there's something there, which is a bit hit and miss, probably better than nothing. So there was that need for a product that could actually be real time. And that's probably the key part, I think. One, removing the laboratory infrastructure, which we are seeing now more and more with COVID, is a key. Laboratories are getting well and truly overworked. But having something that could reach out into those regional areas.
It's also amazing to see companies like TruScreen innovating on a global scale and to know that it started here in New Zealand. Were there any benefits or things you think of that made it better to be a tech company founded in New Zealand to get yourself off and running?
Look, I think the advantage of starting in New Zealand is that New Zealand in general, especially when it comes to health tech, seem to be very progressive and open-minded and willing to support. So obviously, you know, health tech is a slow progress. It doesn't happen overnight. There's a lot of barriers to entry. You need a lot of data. You need a lot of clinical support. So having backing that understands that, that, you know, the returns aren't necessarily going to happen in a couple of years, it's a long game, really helps. And New Zealand does have that understanding. They're often the forefront of medical innovation in general. We've got some very, very innovative medical people out there. And so they're keen to support it. And then New Zealand shareholders also seem to be very keen to support it. So it's a great place to start.
Well, that's awesome to hear. And, you know, as you say, it's not like a consumer product where you just think of an idea and sell it to market. You know, there's you know, challenges involved in that. Were there sort of any specific obstacles that you encountered developing TruScreen? And, you know, how's the company overcome that as you've been on the journey?
Yeah, lots. I think whenever you're dealing with an innovative medical product, I think in general, globally, we are still often slow to adapt new technology. And even then, we lack a lot of data. So, you know, we've got that clinical data. We've had a large COGA, which is the Chinese Obs and Gynae Association, released some data recently, which was the biggest lot of data that we've had, which is significant, but it's taken us a long time. It takes you a long time to get that robust clinical data. So that's a big hurdle, and it's costly. And also then which country do you do it in? Because every country would like it to be done in their region. So that's a challenge. And then obviously, too, having strong clinical support is really important. And government support. And the thing that we find challenging is that often governments don't necessarily want to change what they're doing, or they've got their head in the sand. We have seen a big increase in the last year or two of an increase in women's health in countries like China, Vietnam, et cetera, where they're now realizing that they need to put the resources into women's health because globally there's more of a spotlight on it.
Absolutely. And hopefully that focus will become more and more intensified as we go on. And I really liked hearing what you said too about, you know, the data becoming more available, because, you know, that's something that we are seeing across all sectors, actually. People are really, you know, harnessing the power of that data and using it to make improvements. So hopefully that will build on itself as well. You know, sort of adding to that conversation that we've just had about, you know, the challenges, you know, what are the key learnings and opportunities that you've noticed being a tech company in the healthcare sector?
Yeah, I think we've kind of refined, and this is where COVID has the one advantage out of COVID. We've had a lot of negatives out of COVID, unfortunately, but the one positive is actually given us some time to really fine tune our strategy and what does that look like and why does it look like that. And so I think our learnings are we respond heavily on distributors in the regions for a key reason is that they obviously understand the market, but choosing them is critical. We've got to make sure that we've got a really good distributor who has strong clinical relationships, who's got a good tech team who understands the product, and who's got good government relationships with the hospitals. We now know that that's kind of the recipe that we need, and so that's probably been a learning in the past where if we haven't had the right partner, we haven't seen the traction.
So, Julia, you have a really interesting background. It'd be great to kind of dig in and learn more about yourself. You've got a lot of experience working in large healthcare companies. Was there anything that motivated you to get into the industry at the beginning? And what's kind of been the most rewarding part of your experience to date?
Yeah, well, obviously I started out as a nurse, intensive care nurse at Auckland Hospital, and kind of just went from there, decided to get into selling. Next thing I knew, I was in Australia. Next thing I knew, I was doing my MBA and involved in countries and in leadership roles, and it kind of just flowed from there. I've never kind of set limits on myself, so I'm always trying to do the next thing. I love health. So it's what got me into nursing. So being in a medical company is a way that I feel that I can influence from another area and use my medical knowledge. You get a lot of credibility, you know, when people actually find out that your background is in health and you're leading a health company. You know, often there's that nod of, okay, she gets it. She understands what it's like on the floor, which is important because often I see politicians, I see leaders, I see managers making decisions who really actually don't have any idea what it's like for clinicians in the hospitals. And it's a very different world, and having that understanding is key. So I love to be involved in a product that I feel passionate about. I've always tried to work for companies where I believe in the products. I'm not very good probably if I don't have that passion for it. And TruScreen for me was just an amazing company to get into because I just think this technology needs to be out there in so many countries. It's just horrific the amount of women that actually have no access to screening in the world when it's preventable.
Yeah, it's amazing. And given the kind of the fact that you've had the boots on the ground experience and seen everything up close and personal just gives you more passion and knowledge on what actually needs to be changed and evolved. What have you seen kind of in terms of health tech in the sector that's kind of emerged and how has technology evolved in a good way, I guess, over the years?
Yeah. Look, I think probably one of the biggest ones is robotics. So I think, you know, we're now seeing robotics as the norm. And I think we have to embrace that. I think the biggest next health crisis globally is waiting lists. I don't think everybody really understands the impact that COVID has had, specifically on surgical waiting lists, and surgery provides the cure or provides the medical help for a lot of the issues that we have. And that worries me on a day-to-day basis. And I think that New Zealand's not alone in that. So robotics is probably a key one. I think the challenge with health tech is we're slow to adopt it. For whatever reason, I think in general, medical people don't necessarily like change. We've been trained that way. It's how we've always done it. It worked. And we have to evolve. There is no way that we can service the global population with the health needs if we do not look at tech. It has to be, there has to be remote. And also, too, the majority of the world actually doesn't have access to surgery. So robotics can do that. Tech can do that. AI can do that. And we just have to really embrace it. And I would also say, don't wait till you've got all the data before you embrace something, because I think the lives that you could impact, you know, you try and get it in place as soon as you can rather than waiting for 3 years of robust data.
Yeah, and it's hard to predict what might happen in the future, and no one can really do that. But given your background, I mean, what do you think, or how do you think technology within healthcare is going to continue and evolve, and what innovations might be out there, even though it would take a long time to adopt, probably, but what do you see kind of happening?
Look, I think the biggest push is going to be any innovations that gets treatment out of a hospital. So that's the biggest, how can we treat people at home? How can we treat people at clinics? And what does that look like? Wearables, I'm surprised at how slow wearables have taken off, but I think COVID will actually probably help that when people realize that they don't necessarily want to go to a hospital. There's a bit of a fear of going to hospitals now these days. So I think wearables is going to be a big one. Anything that can be done online. I think that the New Zealand and Australia is very slow to adopt, health information sharing. It still blows my mind that I can move from Waiheke to Taupo and kind of not just instantly walk in and they've got full access to my records. You've got to kind of like do it all manually. And that's a biggie. I think having just doing the basics right will help us be able to innovate in the future.
It is exciting in some ways to see, you know, how much scope there is for growth. But at the same time, you know, you kind of want that growth to happen reasonably rapidly for the good of everyone. And like you say, you know, sort of maybe decentralizing some of that care so that, you know, I think the vast majority of people are really quite uncomfortable with the idea of going to hospital for just about anything. So hopefully we will see rapid progress in some of those areas soon. You know, and looking ahead to the new generation of innovators and people that are joining the tech and the healthcare sectors, what are you noticing in terms of their ideas and the ways that they're seeing innovation in the healthcare sector evolving?
Oh, look, I just think there's ideas coming from everywhere. I think there's apps has changed that. There's a way that we use our phones. there's just innovation coming from everywhere to how do we stop bleeding, to how do we cut someone open, to how do we diagnostics. You know, I think a big push is going to be getting diagnostics out of labs, and I think we'll see that in the next couple of years as well, where, you know, that's another positive of COVID is our point of care diagnostic tools are just the technology in that has just skyrocketed. And that's just going to flow on to so many other diagnostics. So you're going to be able to treat people in your pharmacy or get them screened in the pharmacy. So I think that that's a really great space of being able to reach people, being able to have easy access to data. Because once you've got that data, you can then figure out what to put where. And I just think, especially in surgery is a huge area of tech. And probably from a New Zealand point of view, we just have to make sure that we are embracing it and funding it, which is often a challenge with new technology in New Zealand and how we are set up, is that can be a bit of a barrier to entry, and we need to make sure that that doesn't happen.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see, you know, what sort of leaps happen in surgery in the coming decades, won't it? Because, you know, it sort of seems to, things in that area seem to evolve in really big jumps, and yeah, it'll be nice to see even more progress and, you know, great technologies coming through there. We talk to a lot of tech leaders and actually, you know, leaders across all sectors. And one of the constant themes that comes up is just how tight the labour market is right now. And, you know, the battle for attracting talent and retaining good talent, and the borders have opened, and, you know, everyone that's of a certain age is looking offshore. What do you think we need to do as a country and as companies to, you know, address the talent shortage and to attract and retain people?
Look, I think it's always, there's never one silver bullet, but I do think it's a combination of things. You know, people work for a company that they like, and why do that? So, you know, you got to make sure that your working environment is a nice environment to work in. Have that flexibility. I think the one thing that COVID has shown us is that not everyone likes working in the same way. So hybrids and flexibility is key. Set your offices up so that they are a place where people want to come, so you've got that connection. Remunerate. I think that's the biggest thing that New Zealand doesn't do well, is we're really poor at remunerating our good people, and we do all the other things, but at the end of the day, with cost of living the way that it's going, you know, unfortunately people can get, you know, 20 to 30% more for the same kind of environment in Australia, and that's a big worry. So I think those are the key things, and, you know, make sure we've got good leaders. People stay in an organisation if they are led by someone who they trust and who they believe in. So I think those are the key things that you need to look at.
Yeah, I agree. Those are all good points. And they do say, you know, people don't leave jobs, they leave managers. And so I guess we all need to keep that in mind. One more question before we move into our quick fire round. What makes you excited for the tech sector in the next 5 to 10 years?
Actually, what makes me excited is the unknown. I just think that there's going to be something that's coming out in the next couple of years that I haven't thought of, I haven't even thought, that's just going to be revolutionary, and I find that exciting. And I think that I think what COVID has done is made people more open to what different ways of doing things from a tech point of view, which I think is going to be really key in medical. So that's probably what I'm excited about, is to see what companies have got on offer. And a lot of the innovation comes out of New Zealand, and all I ask is New Zealand to embrace it, because so much of our tech goes offshore because we can't get traction in New Zealand. TrueScreens are not available in New Zealand, you know, and I think that's a shame because we have so much innovation here.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. We need to just really step up and, you know, embrace all the great things that are coming our way and all the change that it can bring for the positive for the whole country. We'll get into our quick fire round. So hopefully you're ready to go. First one, easy one, very tech week themed. What's your favorite tech equipment that you use?
At the moment, it's my Eufy security camera videos, which is, I can see my daughter feeding the dogs when I'm away and make sure she's done her chores.
Oh, very good. Always important to make sure that the pets.
That's a good one. That's called Eufeed.
Yeah, EUFY. I'm not a bit. It's Wi-Fi security cameras for around your house. They're amazing.
Very nice.
My latest one.
Yes. You mentioned, I think you had live in different places, and so this could go in any of your locations. But are there any? What are your kind of favorite local businesses that you like to support, especially during lockdown?
Yes, so I always try and buy everything local in the community that I live in, especially because I'm in a smaller community in New Zealand at the moment where I live. So I buy Christmas presents, birthday presents, and then clothing-wise, I always try and support New Zealand designers and manufacturers.
Awesome. Do you have a favourite inspirational quote or a best piece of advice that you've received that you'd like to share?
Yeah, I have two pieces. One of the best pieces of advice I ever got, being a female leader, and I actually think this probably applies to every senior leader, is to learn to outsource. I'm not as good as I should be, but I'm getting better. And my favourite quote is Einstein, doing the same thing over and over again and expecting a different result is called insanity. And I see that in businesses so many times where they want to change and perform better, but they don't want to make any big changes.
Who are some people that you look up to, whether in your business career or personally, or anyone that's had an influence?
I need to want to single someone out because there's been so many of them. I think that for me, it's leaders in the industry who have taken the time. There's a lady called Dr. Tanvi Gutnan, who is based in Singapore, who's an inspirational leader. She's probably one of the biggest ones. I went to one of her seminars, and sometimes it's just that little snippet that completely gives you the guts to go. And she was probably one that gave me the inspiration to really go for it as a leader, because there's always that self-doubt when you're starting out. And then often too, one of my first mentors when I first started out selling, a man called Martin O'Brien, was the one that just had faith in me to get me out there selling. And I think you just always remember those wise words, and there've probably been a couple, so many good leaders though around the world that I always, you know, if you find someone that you like, I always look to see what is it about them that I like and see if I've got any of those traits, and if not, try and develop them.
Yeah, that's awesome. And finally, what piece of advice would you give someone that's looking to challenge the status quo within the tech industry?
Look, I'd just say give it a go, but you need to have broad shoulders and you just need to keep at it. And there's going to be highs and lows, probably more lows than highs, but you just need to keep going and believe in yourself and have a support person. Because when it's hard, you need that person to pick you up and go, you've got this, keep going. So one or two support people are key. Don't try and do these things on your own. It's just too hard.
Well, Juliet, that was awesome. And really appreciate you taking the time and sharing some thoughts on the tech sector and health tech and all of that. We're very, I think, lucky to have really high caliber leaders on the NZX and in New Zealand in general. If anyone wants to find out more about TruScreen, you can check out their website at www.truscreen.com. That's TruScreen.com or on NZX under the ticker code TRU. So thanks again, Juliet, and thanks everyone for listening.
Thanks for having me.
The information provided in this podcast is guidance only and intended for general information purposes. It does not constitute investment advice. NZX Limited disclaims all liability for any error, inaccuracy or omission, or for any loss suffered through relying on this podcast. Proprietary rights of the podcast are owned or licensed by NZX, and no part of this information may be redistributed or reproduced in any forms or by any means without the written consent of NZX.